This week on RSVNB Update, it's 7 years later and we finally rebuild Edgeville. Also, a discussion of compacted jewelry and patch notes. Building a backlog of updates, including the guild rework. And finally, an update on the changes to the mining and smithing design. This is RSVNB Update, episode 666, recorded Thursday, April 12th, 2018. The Cursed Update. Hello, everybody, and thank you for joining us once more for RSVNB Update this week, episode 666. Will be released.
Dun, dun, dun.
Will be released on Friday, the 13th of April, 2018. Ooh. You know, you and I were discussing this after the end of last week's show, and I said, you know, next week is 666. It's also Friday the 13th. I said, should we have a priest on this episode?
No, but I do not recommend you listen to this episode while in your car. That's probably not a good idea.
Yeah,
I mean, must say I'm very flattered you'd invite me for episode 666 on Friday the 13th.
That's right, and you guys might be wondering who that new voice is. That is Derp, or his full name is... I'm going to try and say this. I believe
yes,
it's
Derpignau. That's close enough. That's better than most people do.
Okay. Is it French?
I mean, it's actually French, and I don't really speak any French.
Right.
So I
Know how to pronounce it. And see, that's the reason I did better than most people is because, you know, when I was growing up, I actually took about 5 years of French as a second language and was to the point where I could almost speak it fluently. But that's kind of gone away since then.
That's more than I did.
Yeah. And you know, things sometimes happen where apparently once I was talking in my sleep, I was speaking French.
Well, that's kind of par for the course where you're at though, right? I mean,
well, no, not
French in your sleep,
not here in Alberta, but anyways, Yeah. So, Derp's here. He is the head of the Honor Council in Clan Quest, which is a body that was just reelected last month with the new Clan Quest Constitution. And I figured, you know, it's nice to reach out and nice to include people in the show who haven't been included before, because you do have a fairly prominent role in Clan Quest, and we do have a lot of listeners from Clan Quest who listen to the show. So, I thought maybe they might like your input.
Did you
I'm the chosen any, one. Yes.
But did you have any collusion with other clans, Derp, to get into that position?
I like to believe that I did it all on my own. It was all just my own power that got me there. And luckily the support of quite a few voters who like me to take the position, which I'm very grateful for. So thank you, all of the people who voted for me.
I voted for you. Anyways, that's not what we're not here to discuss the internal workings of Clan Quest at the moment. But as I have always said on the show, if you are a person and you are looking for a clan and you enjoy questing, Clan Quest is something that you should definitely look at, because I'm there, Earth is there, Colton is there, Derp's there, Sirion, Tycho, everyone you guys love from RSVNB Update is all part of Clan Quest.
Well, not everyone you love.
Yeah, well, we'll get you there one day. We'll get you there one day.
You really are in Clan Quest? That's so bad.
No.
Dude, join us.
Well, I mean, I was established when I first started doing this, so that's kind of, or I probably would be. But Shane, I can't believe, I thought we were going to be talking like fire, you know, with the number of the episode coming out on Friday the 13th. I thought
Hell,
we would get line fire making.
Theory.
This week. Yes.
Yeah, that's actually what I was thinking as well. But no, instead what we got is the Rebuilding Edgeville update, which after 7 long years, we could now put Edgeville back together after the disaster of Ritual of the Majorat. Mandrith is the one who is leading this charge, and you can talk to him there. And he wants to hide all the evidence of the Dragonkin attack, so people will stop talking about it and the fear of their return. So he gives you a list of tasks to do for this, and You know, when you finish this, you receive a Dragonkin lamp as well as a chance of receiving Effie the effigy pet when you stroke a Dragonkin lamp. So, you know, we were discussing this in pre-show, and you guys both said that this was effectively a bit of a letdown for you guys. Why?
You know, for me, I thought that it was... I felt there would be more to it because this was such a significant moment in RuneScape history and the lore and the story. Ritual of Majorat was this, you know, epic pinnacle type of quest. And, you know, I remember going through all those quests just to be able to do it. And then to see like Edril's like, it's burning, you know, and then we waited and waited and waited. Remember, there was a battle in Lumbridge and we fixed it right on up, you know, and we, you know, so on and so forth. But Edgeville just, it never got any love. And we've been talking about it for so long that this, I think I was done with this so fast that it just left me going, wow, that's it. Like, I don't know. I would have loved to have some things that we had to do together, but there just wasn't.
Yeah. And, you know, I think one of the big reasons why that comes into place is because you end up with an instanced area when you are doing this. Because if you have not done Ritual of the Majorat, the area is not burnt up for you.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, and so I understand that it's challenging, that no matter what they did was going to present some kind of a challenge. I get that. But it was... This was, I don't know, I was under the impression that this would be, I mean, not a big update, but it would be like, you know, one of those things that we clean up a place or do something, and it might take a couple of days, 2 or 3 days or something like that, and I mean, you're literally done in 10 minutes. The thing that took me the longest was figuring out how to get the damn broom. But she kept yelling at me.
Yeah, you gotta do it when she's looking away, and that's one of the things you need to do to clean up the scorch marks. You need to use the magic broom that Aggie has in Drainer Village, and to get that broom, you basically need to snatch it from her when she is looking the other way.
Yeah,
it was so awesome just being there in World 66 and the day of release, and there just being so many people in the house all talking. Control all the people trying to get the broom.
Yeah.
You can just see her dancing around, transforming everyone into a pig.
And I think you also need to charge it with water runes, right?
Yeah, 100 water runes.
100 water runes, okay. And, you know, there was also a cost associated with this. You needed a number of planks. You also needed a marble block.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, if you're, I mean, I don't think that's a steep cost for anyone who will have done Ritual of the Majorat, right?
No, and I mean, the GE is like right there. You just pop under the little shortcut and you're good. I mean, what would it have cost? I don't even know what it cost. Probably, I don't know, a couple hundred K maybe, something like that. I don't know.
Yeah, it was.
I didn't even notice.
It was fairly cheap, and you know you also do need planks for this to complete it. So that's something that I think you know if you had that collected in your bank, you would have been fine. We're looking at in total 10 mahogany planks, 10 regular planks, 20 regular planks, 10 mahogany planks. And 10 oak planks, and then a molten glass and one marble block as well. You know, I was a little bit surprised with this because you couldn't use the higher level planks for things that needed, you know, for example, the regular mm-hmm. planks. You couldn't use oak because I don't keep standard planks in my bank. I only have oak planks, teak, and mahogany. So.
Right, yeah, because why would you? But I actually had them, and I don't even know where or how or why, but they were there. It must be a hoarder or something.
Yeah. There's also the bitter cap mushrooms, which, you know, spiked up that day. Mm-hmm. You know, I should have sold some more of those that day. Instead, what I did is I just, you know, went to a central area and gave mushroom spores away to those in Clan Quest.
Yeah, you probably had a bunch of that. You probably
Actually. I did. And you know, that's the real funny thing about it is because you don't ever think you're going to need, you know, bitter cap mushrooms for this. And oh, lo and behold, here we are. We got bitter cap mushrooms. So,
geez, Shane, you missed an opportunity to be a good capitalist and like price gouge people when they needed bitter cap mushrooms.
Yeah, well, I mean, they were selling for upwards of, I think, north of 50K per mushroom when I looked.
Oh, geez. Wow. What I did it last night.
Yeah,
I don't think they were that salty.
Okay, so yours definitely went down in price then. That's good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's what the price was on that. So, quite expensive when you think about it.
Yeah,
but
especially for some mushrooms.
And then basically at the end of the day, you have this nice, clean Edgeville that when you think about it, already exists in game for people who haven't done Ritual of the Mazarot.
Yeah. And it was a smaller area than it seemed like once you started working on it, you know?
Yeah. I'm personally glad that the guard tower has been cleaned up because that is one thing that that's where I started off with my thieving when I first got RuneScape membership.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Oh.
I don't think there's much else to say about this update. Either of you guys have anything else on this? Because, I mean, it's fairly simple. You just run through it and you do the tasks
really
and away you go.
There really wasn't. I wish there had been more. There was an achievement.
Yes, there was. And the achievement name, I said on the Bite this week, the weekly Bite at youtube.com/RSBNV, that I wasn't going to reveal what that was. Do you think we should reveal what the name of the achievement was now?
You know, I thought that we would go more in depth on the show. I you're just giving them a little taste, a little teaser in the Bite, you know.
All right. Well, the name of the achievement was About Kin Time. And, you know, if you put the F on there, you get something else. And at the same time, they're also talking about Dragonkin. It's About Kin Time for the Dragonkin. So there you go. That's the name of the achievement when you complete it.
So does that mean this mystery quest could be Dragonkin?
That Jagex is working on for Game Jam, potentially. Mm-hmm. You know, that was an option.
That would be cool.
That was an option that was being put up there, and I think that might be something they could do going forward. We haven't done too much on that, though. Last I heard, we were technically on pause for the sixth age storylines, so I don't know. I'm unsure at this point.
I mean, I was expecting more lore with this update.
Yeah, so, it was pretty light in that regard, wasn't it? Though with that, I must say that there was the lore books that are going to be added into game at a later date. Congratulations to Bruce Willis on your entry. Expect to be seeing an NPC named Bruce talking or walking around the streets of Edgeville complaining about the tourist destination very soon. And in second place is Froggy 1223. We will be adding your lore book soon to the Edgeville Furnace. That doesn't sound very good, adding a lore book to the Edgeville Furnace.
That's what I was thinking.
We don't want to spoil your books just yet, but you can expect them in the coming weeks. So, I don't have anything else on this. Derp, anything else on this Edgeville rebuilding update?
I actually thought that he meant by adding it to the furnace that they weren't going to add it.
Same.
But it's actually a lore book that's going to be added to the furnace. that's all right.
And I guess before we move on to the patch notes, I'll just say right now that the Game Jam pitching session is happening, and we'll have full coverage of what gets built with Game Jam on next week's episode of the podcast. I just didn't want to leave that out to anyone. But there were some interesting straw polls going around for quests and whatnot. So. All right, so moving on to the patch notes for this week. So, you know, relatively minor this week, I think. You guys just stop me if you feel there's anything that needs to be expanded upon. So harvesting potato cactus should now work correctly to add to farming urns. That's nice. That's something that I would be happy about if I farmed potato cactus, except it's a horribly inconvenient thing to farm, I feel.
Yes.
The Wilderness Swords once again have had their action bar left click set as the Edgevail teleport. That's good. Do you guys use the Wilderness Sword at all for teleporting around?
I would if I did farm runs, but I don't do farm runs anymore.
Right.
I used to use it for the bloodweed runs and to get the seeds and to do the.
I used it for soul rune crafting to access the abyss.
Oh, okay. Ooh.
That's a good use.
Yeah. So basically that run would be you run every so often from Edgevale Bank through the Abyss to the Soul Altar and then teleport back. But there's actually a better way of doing it so that you don't need to go through the wilderness each and every time. And that's to use the Fairy Ring north of Edgevale and use that because that teleports you directly out to where you access the Soul Altar. And then, you know, just a couple quick steps away, and then you're into the Soul Altar, and you fill it up, and you charge it. So you basically charge it up two or three times, and then on the third run, you go through the Abyss, and you get the bulk of XP for that. And that has actually been streamlined a bit with the portable Fairy Ring, if you have a portable Fairy Ring that you can use. So that's a very quick way of runecrafting XP. Just thought I'd mention that here right now. Mm-hmm. Now, teleport jewelry pieces combined with a teleportation compactor are no longer automatically lost upon death.
Oops. As a group kind of person, like a treasure trails kind of person, this is so awesome. Like, I only do clues like 24/7, and every time I die, just for some reason, who dies during clues? I don't know. But I would like lose the Dixite pendants, like the compacted one, and I had to spend again like a few minutes having to buy ruby necklaces.
And that's Dragonkin jewelry too. Like that is expensive.
Yeah.
But who's using Dragonkin jewelry?
Like our Dragonstone. Sorry.
Dragonstone. I mean.
Dragonkin jewelry. Yeah. Oh God.
Yeah. Can you imagine?
No.
Just losing that right off the bat? Do you know how much you lost from that? Derp?
Like from the compactor?
Yeah, from losing the compactor.
I lost at least like 20 compacted rings of duo links and like 10 games necklaces. So yeah, those were all fully charged or like near fully charged, so that does add up over time. So I'm happy that they changed it.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. That's a pretty big one.
Mm-hmm. Goes to show that I'm just not a really good person at staying alive, even while doing clues.
I mean, that's fair. I mean, you don't know what's going to get thrown at you.
That's overrated.
Yeah. Cinderblane glove drops now show up on the Runemetrics activity page.
Okay. Well, that's good.
Yeah. The Saren Godbow attack range has been boosted to 9. It was previously 7.
As it should be.
Yeah, I agree.
I'm not really a PVM expert, but I think this was a necessary buff to be made. Like also with the introduction of the Enchanted Criminal Bolts, the Saren Godbow was just...
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah. And plus, you're going to see that next month when Talos drops the two crossbows. That you're going to have more choices to be made.
Yeah, so...
Oh, what did I say?
Tell us. Talos drops the Saren Godbow.
Right. Okay. Yeah, Talos is already in game. Solak is coming next month. Mouse over tooltips for things like the Elf City clan cooldowns as well as combat buffs and debuffs will no longer flicker on and off when you perform actions, such as pickpocketing to gain more XP and giving or receiving hits in combat.
Good.
Yeah. That was always something that was annoying because you would mouse over it and that would just keep flickering away as though it was constantly updating and refreshing itself. So nice to see that fixed. The Elite Dungeoneering outfit will now work correctly in the Guardian Sphere Challenge Room.
Okay.
And
I don't know.
Thank you for highlighting that. Stuns are now cleared when transitioning from Telos Phase 4 to 5, and that's probably how I inserted Telos into that one regarding the Saren Godbow.
Yeah.
I've never fought Telos, so, I mean, I'm just a PvM.
Not even once?
No, why would I do that?
Well, I mean, you gotta try it when it comes out, I mean.
For Reaper.
I don't do Reaper challenges.
You gotta comp at some point.
No, I am not comping. I will. That is one thing you will learn about me is that I have zero desire whatsoever to comp. Zero desire whatsoever to max. But I will end up maxing either late this year or early next year just by pure attrition of the amount of XP that comes into game.
At some point, everyone will comp or quit. But, you know, you don't quit clan quest. No, you'll comp.
I don't know how I feel about that. Anyways, potions will have a drink option rather than an eat option when clicking on them while in your inventory when the bank is open. That makes sense. You're going to drink this, or eat the potions. Incorrect feedback messaging has been removed from the Toon Bane ore spell when you're using the exact number of runes. All right. I don't know anyone who tunes Bane ore all that often.
Yeah, there's
a master queue that requires you to tune Bane ore.
Okay.
So I think that's why this was spelled.
Oh, okay, right. Yes, I do remember that one coming up. Players should now be able to correctly build wall decorations in the POH.
That's good.
POH is always welcome.
I don't know why that would break, but okay. Survey polls will now display the full length of the votes bar and provides indicators for the BAS percentage required for each of the questions. The Grand Exchange will now correctly use its item guide price when buying and selling items. The Grapple Tree south of the Poison Waste Spirit Tree will now correctly work with the tool-belted grappling hook that came in last week.
Such an awesome update, the grappling hook on the tool belt.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. Because, you know, there's just so many of them, and there's only so many hidey holes and whatnot. And for the ones without hidey holes, you know, you basically got to carry around that grappling hook, and that's a real pain. Rise of the Six Bobbleheads will now correctly show kill count for other players. Loop beam messages now state the items that were dropped. Tannis, I bet you're happy about that one.
Yeah, I am.
And, you know, this is an accessibility update because you often rely on the loop beam to tell you when you need to pick something up.
Yeah, I do everything. I do as much on automatic pickup as I can, but then for the valuable stuff, yeah, I need that loop beam to know that I got something. But then sometimes you don't know what it is, especially if you have like your legendary pet out there that's grabbing it. And so you're like, well, what did I get? You know,
yeah.
So I'm very happy about that.
And, you know, these are little hidden updates that masquerade as accessibility updates, I feel.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not even sure they're ever thought of that way, but that's the effect that they have. So I'm very thankful for them.
Good. The Hellion Aura has been added to the Aura Management System, and the reset mechanic for Auras has been updated to now include both the Hellion Auras and Soul Reaper Reward Refresh Auras as part of the Aura Management System. So those ones were not included here at the very beginning.
This patch was long in the waiting, but I'm really glad it's finally here.
Yeah, do you guys use the Hellion Aura?
I sometimes use it to refresh my Auras, but I don't actually activate it itself.
Okay.
It's like, just compared to last year's Aura, the Desert Pantheon, this one is a bit of a letdown, but then again, the Desert Pantheon Aura was just really overpowered.
Yeah, and I think they learned from that.
Yeah. I think this is nice.
The size of the Skeletal Horror Arena instance has been increased to include additional scenery in the distance.
Always nice.
Yeah, because, you know, previously it was just black and whatnot before the old, or before the massive draw distance updates came.
Mm-hmm.
The level 110 combat requirement from the Dominion Tower and Dreadnips has been removed and is now a recommended combat level when talking to the Strange Face.
Huh.
So,
I guess this was the thing that was logically going to follow now that all the combat requirements are turning into recommended stuff for quests in general.
Yeah, you're going to see people with lower level combats completing Dominion Tower now.
Well, I mean, come on. Dominion Tower bosses are pretty easy, with the exception of just a few. So I think that's kind of a high combat requirement anyway.
Yeah, and I mean, 110... is basically, I want to say, mid-80s, give or take, or 90s, I think, if I remember my combat formula math correctly to what that would be.
Yeah, it's somewhere in the mid-80s, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's significant when you think of what bosses are actually a challenge.
Right,
I mean,
and they're quest-based bosses, too.
Yeah.
So, all right, that's probably a good change then. And it is now possible to change XP received from shifting tombs within the game. Oh, a little shifting tombs update. That little piece of metaphos that's forgotten.
I almost forgot about that. I guess they're still shifting.
You know,
that's bad.
Keep shifting. Someday you
might
be good.
If all these updates came in with the initial release of shifting tombs, that might have been good. But it's still, it just feels so lackluster still.
Yeah.
It's like one game of Shifting Tombs since the release.
Yep, same.
I've never looked back.
Same. All right. Well, that's the patch notes for this week, everyone. We're going to move on to the Build a Backlog segment. And this is what we alluded to last week on the podcast in regards to the changes for the survey, because at the end of the survey stream last week, they did have a bit of a discussion as to, okay, so we can actually do some things now that you players would like. Is there anything here that you guys would like us to do? And this is where Build a Backlog comes in. So this is a poll that is now running in game. It's going to be running for 3 weeks as of the time we're recording this. So an additional 3 weeks. So I guess that'll run till what? The end of the month? 3 more weeks, end of the month. Yeah, that's where that puts us.
Yeah.
They're categorized into small, medium, large, and graphical updates. So the poll here with this does well, that's interesting. I messed up the notes. I put the poll results for this at the bottom of the price changes post. Apparently price changes is equal to polling update, so... Anyways, that's just a little bit of a note for those of you guys watching here. So chances of the items that we can choose for these small, medium, and large updates, I'm just going to run through what's winning right now. So the small ones that are winning are loot caskets being dropped from skilling, faster Menaphos reputation across the board times two.
Okay.
And encouraging exploration within the game world. That's what's winning for smallest.
What does that mean?
Well, I think we can go to the developer blog for this to understand what it means with this. So let's see. Exploration. What does exploration mean? Well, I can tell you with this that the exploration within the game world would be finding hidden items throughout the game world. And they have two potential designs for this. One puts cartographers in the game world who are reward a player if they complete maps of each region by exploring it. And the other puts a finite number of items in hidden places around the world and rewards players for finding them. The aim of both of these is to make exploration and searching of all nooks and crannies in the game world more viable and fun.
All right, so that sounds terrible for me, but you know, I'm kind of confused on the whole idea of a backlog, right? Shouldn't a backlog be something that is on the backlog?
Well, that's like, what they want to do. They want us to build a backlog.
But shouldn't we be prioritizing stuff that's already there?
I think that's what we're doing, aren't we?
Well, I've never heard of that before. Like, I've never heard of any of this, actually, before. As it came up? Like, loot caskets for skilling?
Loot caskets for skilling are, let me find that on the list here. They want to bring more WoW moments to skilling. This would bring another Triskelion style rare reward to solely non-combat skilling, but would give you the immediate opportunity to open the chest or casket, and inside would be resources or other more uncommon items.
I don't remember ever hearing about this stuff before.
Yeah, so and you know, these were things that were kind of concocted at the end of the survey. They weren't really talked about much. They were just ideas, I think, that they probably pulled together from people asking.
Okay.
I think it's also now recently with all the hero items, same ideas on their secret ring and Orlando Smith's hat and such.
Yeah.
They want to also bring more things like that into the game, and maybe some mild version of this is nude gases from scaling?
Yes, that's exactly it. You have a spectrum, and at the far end, you have like the Orlando Smiths and the Hazelmayer's ring, but in the middle, you would have these loot caskets.
You know, I think that's cool. But I also feel like it's also kind of schizophrenic, though, because it's like, okay, everybody, pick some business, and we'll not get it done for a while. How about some more unfinished business, guys?
Yeah, and see, that's I don't know how many of these are going to win, but if it's only three updates that are going to win, it's not a huge deal.
What I'm really surprised about is that the customization of like the action bar and the left click on the action bar, that's not winning.
Right, okay. And
if there's any one updates I wanted from this list, it would be the action bar customization.
Same. And basically what that'll do is it'll allow you to change what the left click or hotkey option of that would be. And it would be individual per action bar slot. So an item could be on the action bar multiple times with different actions on each slot.
That would be so amazing. But it's
not that could actually – see, and that to me, that's actually
like this, that's something that should be done. That is a usability fix.
Yeah.
That should go in there.
We'll get that anyway.
Right. But at the same time, if you look at the ones players chose for small, they are loot caskets, faster Menaphos reputation, and potentially exploration. And all three of these things have a chance to get you something that's worth value. So that's what people are going to choose. I mean, it goes without saying.
Yeah, it does. And here we go again.
Yeah.
I mean, here we go again with polling that I just don't think
it's polling to a little bit too high of a degree, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Other options that people could have chose for this were the Bounty Hunter closure and reward distribution. And they say, put simply, this update would close down Bounty Hunter, which is heavily boosted for rewards.
Again. Just, I mean, they just made a big deal out of bringing it back. Like, what's it? See, that's what I mean when I say it's schizophrenic. It's schizophrenic. Like, I don't.
I mean, I think they're just cutting their losses. I mean, Bounty Hunter was a really nice idea, but it's getting boosted and botted nowadays. And, like, the rewards are actually quite good with the Revenant armor upgrade kits. Mm-hmm. I'm not quite sure what they entail precisely, or the tier 87, tier 88 bows and other weapons. They are actually quite useful rewards, but no one can really get them at the moment. Bounty Hunter is just so heavily botted.
Well, I just want to show me one mini game that isn't boosted that's actually worth playing. Like, I don't know. That's kind of a bigger, you know, I mean, that's a bigger issue that they do need to tackle, but I don't know. I never did Bounty Hunter anyway, but I do know people that did, and the people that wanted it back, you know, and threw a real fit to get it back. And now it's like, what, 6 months, a year later, it's like, you want to cut it? Okay. It just doesn't make sense to me.
It was actually in 2016, they had it back.
Really?
So, yeah.
Gosh, it doesn't seem like it was that long ago.
Yeah, it's been a year and a half, or almost.
Really? Okay.
A year and a half, almost 2 years.
Wow, time flies in this game.
Time does fly.
Next up, dungeoneering contracts, goals for dungeoneers like arc contracts. There would be a notice board outside dungeoneering that gives players a random and frequently changing task. These might be kill counts, resources, time limits, to beat, and more.
Only if I can trade them to Shane.
No, thank you.
If there's dungeoneering updates, I immediately don't vote for it because I hate dungeoneering.
Oh, good. That makes two of us.
Uh-huh. Three. Okay. I don't care for it either. I do what I have to do.
Yeah. I really thought I'd be controversial on this, but we all don't like the scale. The minigame.
Yeah, there you go.
You're one of us.
Elite Hunter creatures, similar to the Elite Slayer creatures update, they would randomly spawn larger creatures with much greater rewards, and the player would have to catch these creatures, which might require more skill, effort, or time.
I think that should be part of a larger revamp. You know what I mean? Like, that could be a component of it, but if we get that, does that then mean that Hunter isn't going to get touched for a long time? So I'm kind of leery of those kinds of
I would say no. I would say there's nothing here that's mutually exclusive.
Okay.
I thought the whole point with the Elite Slayer creatures was to provide Slayer with some more efforts to be put into it, and the Hunter in itself is already quite a non-AFK skill. So Elite Hunter creatures would only basically be improving rates or well, not really increasing the amount of effort you have to put into it. So
yeah, that's true.
This will just be kind of a reward-focused update in my eyes. So I'm not really keen on this. Well, I mean, the Hunter update is always nice.
Yeah. All right. Elite Summoning Familiars was also on the list here. Rare pouches with extra bonuses. When creating pouches, there would be a rare chance at creating an untradeable version of that pouch. Would summon a familiar that is recolored and slightly larger than the conventional one with enhanced versions of its existing benefits, or perhaps new benefits. And once again, what summoning familiars in-game are currently useful in the EOC combat realm, aside from the Beast of Burden?
The Nihils,
yeah. People use Nihils a lot.
But also, beyond that,
sometimes use a Steel Titan when I go like
yeah, to Steel Titan
something, and I think it's not worth to use Ice Nihil or whatever.
Okay.
Not right. Nihil, I don't know which one.
And people still use their Lava Titans when doing mining.
Yeah, of course. The scaling creatures, yeah. The Grand Lobster, the Lava Titan.
Yep. Grand Lobster. It's another one.
The Ents for farming, I think.
So the point here is that they could make these better, but I think at the same point, why not just put these into a summoning rework? Because I mean, it's a great pouch making skill right now,
and I think that would make a lot more sense. And that's why I'm saying, like, I don't know if I want these little touch ups when we should be getting reworks.
Yeah. All right.
You know.
Next up on the list, exploration. We talked about that. Faster Manaphos reputation. Next up is Gilinar Games Agility Sprint Card. So this is that event that happened in the Olympics 6 years ago, the Gilinar Games in 2012. One of those events was a sprint mini game that encouraged you to place cards that represented different actions and to cross the finish line first. And they would bring it back, but perhaps with some slight XP rebalancing and a graphical improvement. I actually enjoyed that game back then. I was surprised that this wasn't higher in the list.
I can't say I remember this, actually. I definitely played back then, but maybe I just didn't really participate in the Gilinar games.
Yeah, all right.
Yeah, I didn't get to play a lot at that time. That's when my daughter was born, so I was pretty busy. Didn't get to do a lot of the Gilinar games.
I feel really young now.
Loot caskets, we talked about that. New invention tools, Hunter, including a Clockwork Falcon.
What's that do?
It doesn't say. It just said this would include a Clockwork Falcon, as Clockwork Falcons are cool.
Okay. I'd rather have a Clockwork like owl. It'd be like the Clash of the Titans owl, you know? It's always... It's always getting messed up. Yeah.
All right. And last small one would be Pyramid Plunder hard mode. Pyramid Plunder is still well played after being in game over a decade, and they would like to propose a hard mode, including more risk, more reward, and more frantic play. It would include new rewards and would not necessarily be in the same location. It could be in Metaphos, for example.
Well, prediction time, because they're not thinking about this in the big picture. When safecracking hits, people ain't going to be doing Pyramid Plunder if they don't have to.
I think they will still do Pyramid Plunder.
You think so? Because I think you do it because you have to do it. There's nothing else in those levels. So you get stuck with Pyramid Plunder.
But there's a choice, because as it is right now, Pyramid Plunder does have a chance to give you the scepter at the end.
Yeah, but it's worth like, what, nothing?
I thought...
It's not... It can't be worth that much.
Let me have a look here. I think there's still going to be a place for Pyramid Plunder here. It's worth 1 mil.
Really?
Yeah. Pharaoh Scepter. 1 mil. All right, everyone. We're back now. We just had a bit of a Discord service outage there. So we had to transition the show to Skype. So we are now back on the old Skype network. So we're going to move on to the medium backlog polls now. And the ones that are winning right now are the Skill Cape Quest, the Alternative Divination Training Method, and Invention Golems. So the Alternative Divination Training Method fixes a criticism that divination is too intensive to be laid back.
It's pretty offensive, too, let me tell you. It offends my sensibilities.
And too laid back to be fun. So it's too intensive, but yet too laid back to be fun.
I understand what they're saying with that. I think it's not worded very well, because it's like, it's not quite AFK, but it's not quite, it's really this in-betweener wiener, you know? It's like, yeah, I totally get it.
Yeah, and they say this would offer an alternative method of training and divination that finds a sweet spot of either intensivity or AFK.
This is probably nice, but I think the real problem with divination is just that it's just caches.
Yeah.
Like, there's only two ways you'll be training divination. It's either through caches or through gathering energy.
Yeah, and I mean, gathering energy is a great money-making method today.
Yeah.
I made like 20 mil in the last week.
Oh, yeah.
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 Up also on here, Skill Cape Quest, level 99 requirement, improves skill capes and perk choice. And for example, when you talk to the Hunter Skill Cape Master, she mentions there's a creature called the... Rarini Wildcat, who is hunted to make the material for skill capes. This quest takes you on a mission to hunt that creature with improved skill capes and additional perks to choose as a reward. We're undecided as to whether or not the skill should require the hunter's skill cape, making this the first skill cape quest with others in the future, or if it should require any skill cape and give you multiple methods of capturing the wildcat. We would likely pull this decision.
No, I don't like that at all.
Yeah, it basically means that if you are 99, you get quick access to a quest.
Yeah, you'd have to do a quest. What if you don't like quests? Shouldn't have to do a quest for a skill.
No. That's not what this means. This means that there would be a quest to do after you get the skill cape as optional. You wouldn't need to do the quest to get the skill cape.
But you would have to do the quest to get the best perks on the skill cape, right?
Yeah, you would.
Yes.
So you have to do the quest.
Okay, I see. And see, for me, that's not an issue because quests.
Right, but like, that's not very to each his own, live and let live kind of thing. You know, that's like, I mean, that'd be like trying to make a quester do PVM. Oh, wait, they did that.
Yeah, they did.
But I mean, in that sense, you also have to comp to get the best perks on a cape.
Well, you do, yeah, and you're right about that. Like, you do. It is best in slot, without a doubt.
I think that this is a nice way to introduce better skill cape perks than are currently in game. I mean, the idea of more quests is always nice. Definitely, seeing as the last few years for quests were just very meager.
Just add them to the 120s and be done with it. Move on.
That's a simple way of doing it as well. All right.
That'd be cool too. Yeah.
Yeah. Actually, I would probably be in favor of the 120s. And, you know, 120, they do go to 120 now. It's just a bit of a sour spot for me that there's nothing in between 99 and 120 for the majority of skills out there. So,
yeah.
Invention golems would be gathering daily items such as flax, staves, and other things, and at high invention levels, the players will be able to make a golem. And this golem can be programmed to automatically gather resources from a selection of NPCs that give them on a daily basis. So pineapples, flax, staves, and perhaps even miscellanea. And this would make the golem a one-stop location for daily resources.
I think that would be cool. I mean, that's really cool, but I mean, aren't we exploiting golems? I mean, what about golem rights? I don't know if I'm cool with this. I feel like we're exploiting free labor here.
Yeah.
They're machines. Do they have rights?
Well, but they're, Mark Zuckerberg's a machine and sentient. He has rights.
So true. It's funny because it's true.
I mean, this is a nice start for a Dailyscape fix.
Yes. Yeah, that's true. And I'm all for invention. I think invention is actually a really well done skill now. Maybe not in the beginning, but now it is. And yeah, I think this would be cool. Especially if they threw miscellanea in there. That would be great. God, that would be really great.
I might actually do miscellanea.
Yeah, I always end up doing it like once every month or 2 months or whenever I remember it.
All right.
Once every 7 years or something.
Yeah, I'm such a slumlord. I just, every once in a while, I'll throw some money at it, you know?
All right. Dungeoneering trekking. Temple trekking and dungeoneering. Oh, God. Fremenic Wars are eager to test themselves in the bowels of Davenheim. They need a guide through which is where you come in. Choose a warrior, complete floors with an NPC ally. Come back with Dungeoneering XP, tokens, and new unlocks for the Dungeoneering Reward Shop. No way I'm staying the heck away from this.
I can't think of anything worse. Like, that is the absolute worst of thing I could ever imagine.
Yeah. It is so bad. Dungeoneering and temple trekking all in one. Oh, that'd be horrible.
And you know it's going to be the dumbest AI in the world. It's going to get caught up on everything. It's, no, oh my God. Can you imagine it in a ferret room? God. No.
Ay. All right. Next up, Garden of Tranquility 2, making Varrok attractive. So win a construction contract from the king to rebuild the dilapidated part of Varrok in a sequel to Garden of Tranquility. Use your own materials and gather some unique parts and resources from around the world. And rewards would be gold for the contract, some construction XP, and some buildings that now have use, such as a new shop. And this would likely be dependent on a Varrok graphical rework.
Now, does that mean we have to give the king some gold to get the contract? That's how it usually works, right?
Yeah, I don't know. I assume we would just be given the contract here because Jagex has to be ethical with this. But I would absolutely love this. Garden of Tranquility is one of my favorite
quests.
Yeah,
it would be cool.
Yeah.
It'd be cool. And
Garden was a nice quest.
And Varrok needs a new coat of paint. Like, it really does.
Yeah.
It really does. Yeah.
We already talked about the high-level falconry and the invention golems. Curadel's origin quest, a standalone quest or saga that goes into the origins of how Curadel was trained as a Slayer Master by her father, the esteemed Duradel, and who was her mother. What were these trials like, and what drove her to continue down the dangerous and sacred path her father trod before her?
That'd be cool.
Yeah.
It's interesting.
That would be cool, and I hope they would like incorporate, like, show us like flashbacks of where she kept popping up while you were doing Slayer,
right?
Grappling, you know, that could be really
fun. And it would
fun.
Need to have Wellgothic sleeps as a requirement, because I think you would want to do it after the death of Duradel.
Oh, spoiler alert!
Yeah. Spoilers.
New aquarium fish. Sorry. Go ahead.
I think we have to put this into perspective, though. Like, there's so many other types of quests that can be done, like a gnome finale, or generally another god's quest, like rite of passage, or
elemental workshop 5
quest or whatever.
Boo.
But yes, Derp, I think you have a very good point there. There's going to be like a cost to that. Like they could be working on something else.
Yeah, and I think I think I'd rather have like a gnome finale rather than the Rodas origin quest. Mostly because I think that the Slayer Master lore has been touched upon recently with the Sunken Pyramid updates with Manaphos. And I think this would tie in a bit with that. And gnomes might just be a nicer thing to just bring up, also with unfinished business and stuff, tying up 5th Age storylines and whatnot.
Yeah, I have to go. I do like to tie up those 5th Age storylines. I think that's really important. But, you know, I guess I could go either way. Let me put it this way. I wouldn't be disappointed with whatever they do with that. Like,
It sounds interesting, but you have to ask the question, what would you rather have? And as it is right now, this ain't high on the list.
Right.
All right.
But we want more quests.
Yes, we do. Next up, new aquarium fish from Waterfall Dungeoneering and Deep Sea Fishing. That's all I'm going to say about that. Player-owned armory, show off your collection. It would be a surface world location likely near the artisan's workshop where you can store, collect, and show off your collection of weapons and gear. This comes with achievements, titles, and an item log.
I want that.
Why, though?
Extra bank storage.
Okay.
I did not look at it in that way. Right.
Okay, that might be a good idea.
It seems so inconvenient having to run to Artisan's Workshop every time you need to get your gear.
Well, there's easy, really quick
ways
to get
to the valley. They could tie it into the bank rework taster.
Yeah.
Or the bank rework when that arrives. Mm-hmm. And it adds a new level of immersion of going to the armory before you go off on your quest to gear up.
Yeah, it's kind of cool. All
right, that's neat. We already talked about skill cape quest. Next up is trimmed skill or combat pets, and the ability to trim your skill pet. This would be through a mini quest that tasks you with completing skill feats with your pet in tow, or to gain the pet for a second time, and they'd pull which option is preferred.
See, I like that, but I don't think it should be quest related.
Yeah, I would vote for getting the pet the second time. No, yeah, I know there's going to be lots of people who are going to hate me for that because I know multiple people who got over 50 million thieving XP to get the thieving pet.
You don't got to trim it, you know.
Also, Brony's also just a meme.
I think I must have close to a record for the amount of skill pets I have. I think I have 7 or 8 and, you know, only like no more than 50 million XP gains since that came out.
Yeah, you got a record for the least amount of effort it took to get home.
Incredibly lucky.
Yeah. I got Malcolm, Rue, Herbert, Brains, the woodcutting one. Yeah, lots of them.
Is it called Woody?
Yep. Man.
Bubbles. You have Rue and Herbert.
Yep.
I won those.
Yeah. Rue destroyed my goal of having one of every dragon. Ruined my time.
I should make a video one day showing the pets I got and the amount of XP it took.
Yeah.
You're so lucky, it's ridiculous.
Yeah, well, I mean that's where my luck comes in. I don't PVM or anything like that. So next up, for large, the ones that are winning right now are the Aura Rework, the Guild Overhaul, and the Player-Owned Town. So the Aura Rework for this would bring down prices and gain currency from logging in, and there would be clear improvements that they could make to the Aura system, such as making the currency gainable each day that you log in rather than the current days of membership, which feels more fair. And they could also rebalance Auras to be less expensive, and they could dramatically bring down the price of Auras that feel like a requirement for completing certain content.
Obvious number one. This needs to happen.
Yeah.
I still have over 1 million loyalty points.
I don't know how you do that. Mine don't last long at all.
I mean, I don't buy auras I don't need. But I don't know.
It's just so hard to get into high-level PVM when you're a new player. Like, it takes so long to just get the entry-level PVM auras.
Yeah.
And also just in general, the fact that that doesn't really have to do anything with the purchasing of auras, but the fact that they're time-gated, like in a sense mm-hmm. of usage as well. Like, auras just are a thing that needs to be tackled, and this is a good step in the right direction.
All right. Next one is one I'm really happy about, and that's a guild overhaul. They say they would make them relevant, and skill guilds are outdated and have been largely overtaken with places like the Elf City. Where they will bring them up to date and give a player a reason to train there, and this might include the quest guilds and giving them a reason to exist. A few of us in Clan Quest were working on a project behind the scenes in 2015, basically redesigning all of the guilds in RuneScape. We didn't really finish it at the time, but this is definitely something that I think is a good update and should happen. So this is the one I voted for here. The guild overall. I think
it definitely should happen, but I would love to see the guilds as a place of achievement in the highest. Like, I would like to see the guild be a post 99 place that you would train like post 99 and have that kind of recognition and just be more, you know, exclusive kind of.
Right. And now thing. Compare that with the cooking guild, for example.
Yeah.
Or the Warriors Guild, which is good for getting up to the Dragon Defender.
Yeah.
So I totally agree with that, and I really, really want to see this option win. I don't know how far away we are. And then the third most popular option is player-owned town, be a mayor, and unlock characters. The player reclaims a portion of the wilderness and uses it to house various refugees of RuneScape. Various hotspots could be built to construct buildings, gaining construction XP and level those buildings up. Once built, you can attract NPCs to live in your town, either from quest content or by skilling in the open world. The player then makes the decisions that will affect the well-being of the town and its people.
Oh, I'm sorry, Shane. Yeah, I got to go with this because this is power and I want power. So, yeah. I want a town. Don't you want a town?
I don't like this at all. Really? I mean, this is really just a new Church of You, I think.
Well, we didn't get that, so I'm still waiting. Yeah, give me a town.
I'd personally rather have the Church of You, because I already believe in various circles that I should be worshipped by a god. Or as a god.
Comments? I was actually surprised that this is so high up in the poll.
Well, who doesn't want to be a mayor, right?
Yeah, like, and we want anything construction
related. You could have random attacks of things from the wilderness coming in that do things to your people.
Or people.
Yeah, there you go.
You know.
I mean, I think it's hard for me to see how this would really be something impactful. Like, you wouldn't be able to put important NPCs in your town, for it would be different for everyone. So I think this would just, per definition, be a really niche kind of thing. So maybe that's why it's not really attractive to me.
Okay.
Yeah, you're probably right. I'm being blinded by power, though.
And plus, you know what I also see this as? I see this as the next generation of the POH, because we got the construction skill, and that was largely done in the POH. There hasn't been much done with construction since then. And everyone always says, let's do a POH rework and make the POH viable again. Well, the POH is viable in terms of what it acts for as a storage box right now. But I think the player-owned town would let people see what modern RuneScape can do with construction rework or with construction.
Well, and you could totally do, like, have cooler stuff, like, okay, you know how you have your like gilded altar in your house? We could have a church. Like, you know what I mean? Like, we could just turn this stuff up to like just 100. Cool.
But we could have cool stuff.
Yeah.
And power.
And power, yes.
All right. Okay. That might be a good option. Other large updates that could possibly arrive include an Araxar quest, which would explore what Araxar is and how it came to be. And why do vampires fear it, and what does it want? It would not be a requirement to be able to defeat Araxor.
Yeah, I'm not that interested.
I mean, it's a quest, so I'm all in favor. But again, same as with the Kurla quest. Maybe something else would be more appropriate.
Like Elemental Workshop Part 5.
Yes.
Oh,
I mean,
oh, no
we kidding, have I would love now. Elemental Workshop Part 5.
You know, I just keep saying it because I hope to talk it into existence.
I'd love it. I'm all in favor. Let's do Elemental Workshop 5.
So you like to torture people.
Another idea of like a quest
Wilson
they could
do. The only one waterboarded.
You know, another thing they could do quest-wise is they could do the next generation of Enlightened Journey, if you get the reference there.
Enlightened Journey.
Enlightened Journey was the Captain Picard quest.
Okay, gotcha. All right. Subtle.
Shit. I love how we just both didn't get it at first.
You guys need to watch more Star Trek.
Yeah, we're not as versed as Shane. Oh, I didn't remember that's what the name of the Enlightened Journey was. Or that,
yep,
what's the
that
name
was
of
the hot air balloon quest.
Okay.
Yeah.
Challenge improvements, parity across challenges, and reduced daily scape. The challenge system is successful as part of the game, but it has flaws that they would like to address, such as challenges are very uneven, with some requiring large amounts of time and effort and others virtually none. Rewards sometimes not feeling adequate for compensation, and newer content not having challenges associated with it. We would also like to try out challenges that would reduce daily scape, including challenges that just ask for an amount of XP gained in a day, so it doesn't determine how you train.
But why are they asking us that when we've already told them we want a reduction in daily scape?
Yeah. Agreed.
Yeah, they should just do this.
Yeah. All right. A clan boss, which would be a boss so gargantuan and difficult to defeat that no individual could take it down. Instead, individuals in a clan would chip away as much health as of the monster as they can, and if a clan as a whole manages to defeat the clan boss, then the player is given a reward based on the percentage of damage they dealt to it.
Great for PVM clans, but everyone else.
I agree. All right. Point.
Moving on. I mean, I can see us in Clan Quest just massing this boss.
Yeah, we do have a pretty large contingent for that.
Yeah, I think that'd be a cool thing.
But for other clans, I mean, it's just adds another unnecessary barrier to entry to kill a boss, and that is being a clan that is large enough to do that. And that, you know, puts more gravity towards the larger clans, which isn't necessarily a good idea.
Yeah, and yeah. I mean, I don't know how it is in Clan Quest, but just my experience with clan events is like herding cats anyway.
Yep.
And it's, you know what I mean? So, I don't know. I'm not a big fan of that one.
Yeah. The Karamjan Temple Pyramid Plunder for Woodcutting. You could probably tell from this survey that Jagex is big fans of Pyramid Plunder, but there's no reason why Pyramid Plunder has to be reserved for thieving. Similar mechanics could be applied to woodcutting, for example, and we have loved the idea of an Incan-style temple in Karamja, overgrown and forgotten, containing information on the lost Karamjan god.
This would be so cool.
That would be cool.
I agree. This would be really
cool. Yeah, at first, I'm like, I don't know, but then they really pull it out in the end there. I'm like, ooh, that'd be cool. No, this is the like, the monkey that's always trying to bang stuff. Is that?
Marimbo.
Yeah, Marimbo. Yeah, there we go.
Marimbo, yeah. I think this would be cool. Like, it's a woodcutting update, which barely happened. Like, I think the last one we got was the Acadia trees,
which are in Menaphos.
Yeah, and that's not really a huge update. I mean, they're now the best woodcutting method in game, I think.
Yeah, if you crystallize them. Yep, that's right. Mm-hmm.
Yep. But really, they're just a new kind of tree, and I think woodcutting could use a new, different method to train.
Yeah, for sure.
And and tying it into Karanja and the Karamjin God would be a great way to do it. So.
Yeah, and a cheeky reference to Harambe.
Oh yeah, they could bring that in because when
totally.
when the gorilla yeah. pet came in, they remember the entire first two pages on that post were Harambe until they shut it down.
I mean, it would be such a such a RuneScape thing to do too. It'd be cool.
All right, two more. The skill guide rework, which would offer more info on unlocks, and the skill advanced guide would benefit from more information on each unlock so that new players, returning players, and maybe even the odd current player could look at what has been unlocked, find out what it does, and find out how to make or / gain it. And, you know, this is something RuneScape has needed years ago because, you know, this is what kicked off fan sites and now the RS Wiki is that if you need to know how to make something, you just go to one of those sites. And in reality, for a new player, they might not know about the RS Wiki or they might not know about a certain fan site out there. But, you know, you might as well just add that into game, I think.
You know,
and you could make it even community contributed as well. Just have a form here to submit stuff and have a couple JMods go through it and see if it's right.
Didn't they already try that, though? Didn't they try to have their own wiki and no one used it?
Right.
No one
did it. I mean, this is something that would be in-game and it would be firm. Like, it wouldn't necessarily be the best way to train Herblore to 99. It would just be, how do I make a anti-fire potion? How do I make a summer pie? That kind of thing. And where do I find the ingredients?
Well, I tell you what. Join BitSpite's friends chat, and there will be some kind person will help you out.
Right? Yeah, that's true. That's another way of doing it.
You know, that would be my first route.
You know? Yeah. All right. Fair enough. And the last one is a Virago origin quest. Virago being a ancient being of anima. So what's the deal with that? And when did it get created and by whom? What's its purpose? What's it doing now? What's the end game? What's it doing now that end game is over? And it would not be a requirement to be able to defeat Virago.
Well, that's a good thing. I mean, apparently when he's not putting the beat down on oversized pigs, he's putting the beat down on over-anxious players. Yeah.
I'm still salty the Godless won that world event.
Oh, really? You were hoping for Tuska to win that.
I wanted the Gilgamesh to be the Bowers.
Interesting. Wow.
I was wondering, what would Jagex do if Tuska had actually won?
Yeah, and you'd have more cleanup events like Edgeville, that's for sure.
Or cheat.
Yeah. But I think a Virago origin quest would be really cool.
But yeah, and you say that, and you're a quester, I'm a quester. You know, that's the default answer here. Yeah. And part of me just feels like, you know, with these origin quests of Curadel, Virago, and Araxor, it feels like they were scraping the bottom of the barrel of what can be done for quests. Maybe.
Yes.
They're just simple things to do. There's so much else out there that could be talked about.
But I'd rather have this than for them to not have a coherent story where the lore is going. And if they're not in a place where they can do that right now, or they don't have that down yet, then I'd rather have these origin stories.
But there's so many better origin stories to do. Like, there's still so many gods we barely know anything about. Like Armadale with the Rites of Passage.
Yeah.
It's been a meme for the past 20,000 years.
Yeah, I've long been a proponent of the Big Bird quest.
Yeah, yeah. I'd like to see that one, too.
Big hypocritical chicken quest.
Yeah, and I would like to go, you know, I mean, I think we talked about this during the survey. I'd like to see the Icean world and
a lot more
Ceridomen stuff. Yeah.
Right.
But I just don't want them going off haphazard and having too many different, I don't know, too many different balls in the air when it comes to storyline and stuff.
I mean, this is also why I'd like to see Death of Chivalry 2.
Oh, yeah, like that would be good.
Yes.
I was really surprised that it scored so low on like the recent
series. That's what I told Shane the same thing.
That's such an excellent quest, like to tell more about Ceridomen and explore the, like, some Icene stuff and like Centaur stuff. Yeah, it is.
That's really great. I actually agree with that. So thank you for bringing that up again. So that's the large updates. Now, there was also a section for graphical reworks. The sections here that are winning, surprisingly, for the graphical reworks are Varrock, Dark Beast, Corporeal Beast, and Lodestones. Varrock is winning, but it seems like players have short memories because recall last year we saw a white-boxed version of a reworked Sears Village. So I'm wondering why Sears Village is not higher, why that just decision wasn't made internally to finish that one.
I mean, maybe people know that Sears Village is happening, so they're not voting for it.
Well, Sears Village is on the list too, but it's further down.
Oh, I got you. Okay. Well, and the thing is, like, with the exception of Lodestones, every one of those needs to happen. Like, every one of those needs to happen.
Yeah.
Yeah. Why is Lodestones so high up? That's surprising. What do people expect of a Lodestones graphical rework? Do they expect fancier stones?
I don't know. I don't know. I don't know why it's on the list.
I genuinely don't know. I was scrolling through the ball options and I saw Lodestone graphical rework and I was like, how do I see this?
What did you call it, Derp? Something of stones? What did you say of stones regarding Lodestones? You said something of stones? What kind of stones were people expecting?
Fancier stones. It's like we can go to the construction estate agent and that would be cool that we can customize our lodestones. We can have them like in dark stone and in fancy stone and in tropical wood and stuff.
No.
Oh, that'd be cool.
Okay, yeah, I'm in favor now. Yeah. So I mean obviously they could go that way, but let's just put the brakes on that right now. So
such a waste of time.
Before we wrap up, and you know that's it for this poll this week, and we'll check back when the actual results come in of what this is, because it does run for 3 more weeks, so it's a long time. But before that, there was a little bit of a post on a certain website, and it wasn't really posted on the official forums at all. But there have been some changes, quality of life, and some major changes to the mining and smithing beta and the mining and smithing rework here. And we got those changes here for you right now. So they are adding an ore box, and this replaces the ore bag. Because when the ore bag was brought in, it was created and destroyed automatically. And this has been reimagined as the ore box, which you make using your own smithing level or buy from the GE, and you have to remember to take it with you. Which I think makes a lot more sense than a random item just appearing, right?
It makes more sense, but I don't like it.
Okay.
Because the ore bag, it was right there. It was just another thing at the bottom that you clicked on. You could see what you had, kind of thing. Like, I don't know.
What if this operated it makes more the same sense, and but, was able to be tool belted?
Oh, yeah, that'd be cool. I would, for sure.
The ore box is an inventory object. It's bankable and tradable. It's made by using two bronze bars, and you smith it for 200 progress, and you get the ore box. By default, the ore box will carry 100 of each copper and tin ore. The player's ore is tracked on variables, so having multiple ore boxes does not help. And some rewards can increase the capacity or upgrade the ore box either for a specific ore or for all ores. They will remove any hand-holding mechanics from acquiring and using the bag, so the player needs to remember to bring it with them. The box is still loaded the same way, but emptying the box into the bank no longer destroys the bag, and mining ore no longer adds the box to the player's inventory. Now, to upgrade it to carry higher level ores, you need to use special tradable upgrade items. So when an upgrade item is used, it is consumed to permanently upgrade the player's account rather than being tied to a specific ore box object. These upgrades must be applied in order. For example, player cannot use a steel upgrade without having first used an iron upgrade. Upgrading the items does not have a level requirement. The 9 upgrades are iron, steel, mithril, adamant, rune, auric larium, necronium, bane, elder rune, and then an all-in-one upgrade, which takes one ore box for each of the various styles mentioned previously. You smith it for 4 cycles and it becomes an all-in-one ore box. Now, for each of these ones along the way, they require the various smithing level and 2 of the bars. So 2 rune bars, 2 orichalcum bars, and 2 necronium bars, and so on and so forth. And the amount of progress that you need to smith these for goes up. It starts at, as we said, 200 for the bronze, 400 for the iron, 600 for the steel, 800 for the mithril, 1,000 for the adamant, and so on and so forth. And each of these is going to give a small amount of XP, with the top at the Elder Rune upgrade giving 2,000 XP. And as you go up to each level, they will store up to 100 of the mentioned ore. So the steel one will store 1,000 coal, 100 coal, 100 mithril. The adamant one will store 100 adamant and luminite. Rune will store 100 runite, and so on and so forth, all the way up to Elder Rune, Light Animica, and Dark Animica. And the idea with this is you will need to have it on you at all times, and that the players will be able to smith these upgrades and sell them.
Oh, you can. Okay. Yeah, I didn't know you could smith the
upgrades. You coming around for this idea?
Yeah, I am. Yeah. I am.
I think it's a good idea. You know, I hesitate to say this, but I would like to see this put onto the tool belt and have a quick way of accessing it. I don't know how that would work, though.
I think adding it to the tool belts would really make it a hand-holding thing again.
But what if it was at the highest level? Like, you could only add it to the tool belt when it was completely upgraded and done.
And then, plus, you'd also need another way of extracting items from it, because you need to click on it. So perhaps it can't be added to the tool belt.
Oh, okay.
I mean, I think the main thing that the ore box has got over the ore bag is the fact that it won't just be generated every time you go mining, but you actually have to think to bring it.
Yeah. All right. That makes sense.
I think that's fair.
And as it was, the ore bag was a little bit confusing how it could just disappear.
Yeah.
So, all right. I don't really have much else to say on this. I think it's a good idea.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess I'm coming around on that.
And there is an actual thread here, apparently, if the website will load for this. Oh, it just goes to the general beta hub. All right, fair enough. Now, Masterwork Armor degrading, based on feedback on the subject, upgraded Masterwork Armor now degrades to broken rather than dust and is repaired by using a piece of Masterwork Armor of the same type on it.
So,
degrades to broken, yes.
Degrades to broken, but you have to make another piece of Masterwork Armor and use it on it.
Yeah.
So, I'm failing to see what they did here.
I mean, augmented, maybe?
Or is it this augmented? Just like, I feel like this is a dummy test. I don't know.
Because what happens? Because augmented items right now, if they are degrade to dust, they still just degrade to dust if you augment them, right?
Yes.
Yeah. I think the thing here with this Masterwork Armor, that if you can upgrade it, then it it degrades to dust or to broken, and then you can repair it by using a normal piece of Masterwork Armor. So you don't actually have to upgrade the piece with which you repair.
Oh, I see what you're saying. So it's just a standard piece of Masterwork Armor that you use, but the upgraded Masterwork Armor, the Tier 92 variant, you just use the Tier 90 piece on it.
Yeah. That's the idea behind it.
Okay, I got you now. That makes more sense, because the way it read there, I'm like, you're doing exactly the same thing, but okay.
Yeah. Wouldn't have made sense otherwise.
That's fair, I think.
That's a good thing. It's like when the developer blog came out and it was all over Reddit, it was just, why does it degrade to dust? This is really bad. and they fixed it, so that's really nice.
Yeah, because I don't think we're...
Because remember, this is going to be tier 92 power armor.
Yeah, I just don't think... I don't think we have an appetite for degraded dust anymore.
Yeah, especially at tier 92.
Mm-mm.
So, that's good. And this is upgraded Masterwork armor. We'll stress that again. Thank you, Derp, for pointing that out.
Yeah.
Next up, the Artisan's Workshop. Ceremonial swords are back as an optional D&D, which can occur while smithing in the same manner as the pit. Okay.
All right, yeah.
And there's actually a little bit more to this than was highlighted here, because the Artisan's Workshop is now effectively becoming the Smithing Guild. And they say it reinvents it and declares it a proper smithing guild. The smithing guild will become the default location for players to smith together, and small conveniences such as the ability to earn respect and being the only place where the redesigned burial equipment can be made will make it a place where high and low level smiths can skill together socially.
That's cool.
Yeah. And they say, you know, currently, you know, you have the surface world building in an underground cave. In the Artisan's Workshop, the underground section and the skilling activities it contains and the stairs leading down to it will be cut completely. The tracks and cannon-making activities are unpopular and serve no real purpose in the progression of redesigned smithing.
Well, when they write, they write.
Yeah, definitely.
They write.
They write.
But wait, there's more. The surface section will be cut in two. The western part of the building will become a general purpose smithing area, and the furnaces will be replaced with forges, and the ingot area will be replaced with a furnace, and a bank can be added. Near the middle of the room is a special port for applying a luminite injector, see below, and the eastern part of the building will be walled off with a door that requires 40 smithing to pass through. This then becomes the smithing guild. And in this area, players will make the burial equipment, which has been reimagined with new mechanics. So burial equipment is how they're going to be retheming decorated items to make them more intuitive. A big problem with the decorated items right now is how unintuitive both the name and the process is. The old burial armor mechanic will be completely removed, as that sort of mostly AFK smithing is now possible using the skill's basic mechanics. Burial equipment requires its own specific set of anvils and accompanying forges, and these should be placed at the end of the room with dwarves standing behind, ready to take the item away as it is finished to reinforce that it is destroyed. Meanwhile,
yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
I like that.
Meanwhile, the equipment is just decoration rethemed with the item destroyed immediately rather than having to hand it in manually, and this should remove the ambiguity of how the process works as well as the confusion over cosmetic benefits of decorated items. So this is that decorated item aspect that we were talking about before.
Yeah, and I think this clears up a lot with that. So, yeah, you know, when I first saw these, I wasn't feeling real good about them, but now that we're kind of going through them, I really like that change.
Yeah, because like, basically that is a really good one. You'll be able to bring your collection of Elder Rune plate bodies in plus five and decorate them, and away they go. Let's see. The player takes any smith item from Adamant onwards, which has been upgraded to the maximum upgrade level to the special anvil. They will choose to smith that item into a burial item, which destroys the item in return for a very generous XP per hour. So this is your pay you play money making, or sorry, XP making at the cost of insane money for the smithing skill. Insane money spent, insane XP returned. They will still use the standard smithing mechanics, so items must be heated, and at the end of the process, the armor is automatically destroyed. So adamant and higher makes sense because level 40. This will be balanced in exactly the same way that decoration is currently, and the ability to decorate equipment will be removed as burial effectively replaces it. Now, one additional option the player has is to make an entire suit of burial armor in one go, and if the player brings a matching set of complete armor, they can use a special recipe to destroy them all at once. This takes the same total amount of time as smithing the pieces individually, but gives an additional 5% XP in total. This increases the XP per bar as well as the XP per hour.
Okay.
Next up is the Luminite Injector, and these are a brand new item which can be purchased. And basically, in the center western part of the room is a device with a hole in it, and using Illuminite Injector on the device causes the whole workshop to get a buff for 5 minutes, and for the duration of the buff, the color of the forges change from orange to blue, and all players smithing everywhere in the building generate 1 additional progress, modified by heat every time they make a smithing strike. This applies to all smithing in the building, including burial equipment, and this is approximately a 10% XP increase with the smithing XP speed.
Oh, wow. Well, that'll always be on, but it's cool.
Yeah, and that's why it's obviously a social area.
Mm-hmm. That's cool.
I'm just going to go through ceremonial sword making here, then we'll run through the rest of the stuff rather quickly. But ceremonial sword making is going to stay, but it'll be in D&D, which is similar to the pit in agility, so it won't be daily or time-related. And whenever a player...
Yeah, people were really... against having this removed, and I was also really surprised by this.
I didn't know
people were so emotional about ceremonial sword making.
They're not. They're emotional about the best XP rate.
Exactly.
That's fair enough.
So whenever
carry on.
Whenever a player finishes making or burying an item of any sort while anywhere in the workshop, they have a chance for a dwarf to run up to them and hand them a ceremonial sword design. They'll get a chance to design scales with the amount of progress required to make the item, so faster or slower. Items generate designs at the same rate. The design is a random number, 1 through 5, and determining which sword pattern has to be made, and the player can choose which metal, bronze to rune, to make the sword out of, and higher tiered metals have a higher chance, have a higher smithing requirement, but award more XP and are harder to get a good score on. So this is effectively the same as it was before. The XP reward will be balanced to be generous for the player's level and for the time spent, and very generous for materials since no materials need to be used. So... That's what the positive to come out of this is that there's no materials that need to be used anymore on this. So, burst pipes will continue to occur. Other events such as animated armor and bronze ceremonial sword events will be removed. The reward shop will stay the same, but it's in the eastern part of the building and has a 40 smithing requirement. Respect is earned by smithing XP anywhere in the building at the same rate as it is currently, 1% respect for every 10,000 XP. Players can earn respect through normal smithing as long as they do it inside the artisan's workshop. Some of the rewards do need updating, and any old rewards will be converted across to new rewards. So if you've unlocked the old version, you'll automatically unlock the new version. And then basically... looks like most of the things like the golden cannon and whatnot will be staying the same. Bonus packages have been replaced with the Illuminite injector. Quick repairs and repair experts are the same as well. So largely the same, but reimagined and looks more modern.
Mm-hmm.
I actually like the sound of this. It sounds good.
Yeah, and I was curious what they're going to do with artisans and all that, but this is all good stuff.
Indeed. And finally, after the beta, they changed the core mechanic of smithing so that you can continue to make your item even at zero heat. And before, progress would stop completely until you reheated it. Now progress continues, but with a 50% penalty. This allows for completely AFK smithing, but half as fast.
Excellent.
I'm not sure how I feel about that. I don't like the idea of AFKing it.
Well, but I think this was better than some of the other options. It's way better than getting some crap you had to do dungeoneering for.
Good idea. Good point. You know, good point.
And if I feel like if they didn't do this, then it would feel like they were taking away something to a lot of people. And this way, you kind of walk that line a little better. I think it's a good change.
And plus, we still have the Dungeoneering auto heater, which will reapply heat if you go below 50%.
Okay.
So is that a thing? Yeah, it was a thing in the beta. And I mean, there's nothing here that says it's not at this point.
But before that, you would have had to use that, right?
Yeah, I mean, now you can just do it without it.
Yeah.
All right. So, in respects, then, that's a good thing, even though I dislike AFK training methods.
Well, different strokes there, Shane. Different strokes. Yep. It's okay. And diversity makes the world go round.
And that's what we got for the mining and smithing beta changes. One small note before we move on to tech news for the week. Prices for RuneScape are going up effective June 4th, 2018. So for those who have been unsubscribed for more than 14 days, your price will go up if you break your subscription, and the price of bonds, treasure hunter keys, and rune coins will also be increasing. So as we're looking at right now with this, for 1 month of membership, we're looking for $6.99 Great British Pounds, $10.99 US dollars, and $11.99 Canadian. So that's
a pretty significant hike, isn't it?
Yeah,
$2. I mean,
yeah, we're
never mentioning euros.
Well, it's $9.49 for the euros. That's on this matrix too. It's $9.99 US right now, I believe.
Okay. Still a decent hike.
Yeah, a dollar. Mm-hmm. And you know, I am grandfathered in on the Canadian price, so that's nice, I guess. And plus, there's also Premier Club each and every year that people can subscribe to as well for a decent value. The Canadian price actually went up $2. It was $11.99 Canadian. I'm not sure how to check what the US price is. I'm fairly certain the US price was still $9.99 as well. But
well, that's because your money isn't worth as much, right?
That's right.
You're over there trading beaver pelts and all kinds of
and using Monopoly money. Thank you. I enjoyed that. bond prices are going up. $6.99 US for one bond, $3.99 Great British Pounds, $5.69 European euros, and $7.39 Canadian. And, you know, there's I guess this is largely due to world economic factors at this point.
Yeah, so. Well, and I guess if you can get an extra dollar out of people before this mobile hits, and you really think that you're going to
Brexit
pick up business.
Brexit. And, you know, there's really not much they can do about this because it's just the way the currency markets are going. And for a long while, you know, through the last number of years, world currencies were actually really strong and really close together in terms of their actual values. You know, comparing the US, the UK, and the European Union, and even Canada, they were all really close at a time, to a point where there wasn't much variance between them. And, you know, we'll swing back at some point in the future regarding this. So,
you know, I hate to say this because I don't want to give them any ideas, but at the end of the day, comparatively speaking, it's still a decent deal.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? I mean, for what we get,
it really is.
We get a lot for that. Yeah, so, you know.
Yeah.
And besides, who doesn't buy Premier Club unless they're dedicated, right? Unless you're grandfathered in, right?
Yeah, I was going to say I don't buy Premier Club.
Oh, you didn't? I thought you did.
No. Well, I was going to. I was really close. This was the closest I've ever been with this year, but I didn't. Right. I'm afraid. I'm still afraid.
Well, just keep your grandfathered in price and you'll be fine.
Yeah, that's what I'm doing.
Yeah. All right. Well, this is June 4th, so it's still a long ways away. All right. So we're moving on to tech news right now. Mm-hmm. What's not to say with this, right?
Uh-huh.
So, Mark Zuckerberg, Facebook still in the news this week.
Boy wonder.
You know, he was testifying on Capitol Hill in front of various committees in the Senate and the House in the United States. And, you know, he apparently answered over 600 questions in the span of 2.5 days. And, you know, there are some very key findings to come out of this. And one of them is that Facebook did not notify the FTC, the Federal Trade Commission, about the Cambridge Analytica data leak in 2015 because the company considered it a closed case because it was well within the confines of what their terms of service allowed. And this is where we had 87 million users have their Facebook data harvested by a quiz app. And, you know, 87 million users, they didn't even bat an eye at that because it was well within the way that Facebook works.
You know, but in one, why would they in another sense? Because Congress is so disingenuous when it comes to this, because they passed the rule that Facebook could sell that to whoever they wanted. Third parties can sell any of your information. Doesn't matter.
Yeah.
So, and you know what I mean? But now it's like, oh my God, I can't believe
it. It's here. I can't happening. Believe it.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was also revealed here that Mark Zuckerberg had his own Facebook data compromised in this leak.
It's ironic.
It is.
Like, it's a quiz app. And, like, why would the Facebook founder install a quiz app? And
I don't
know. What a guy.
He's lonely.
Now, the next question was, you don't think you have a monopoly? And this was between Senator Lindsey Graham of South Carolina about whether or not Facebook had a monopoly. And apparently Lindsey Graham asked Mark Zuckerberg to name competitors. And he cited Google, Apple, Amazon, and Microsoft. But then Lindsey Graham kept probing Mark Zuckerberg and he said, you don't think you have a monopoly? And Zuckerberg said, and this was the perhaps one of the most absolute hilarious things here. It doesn't feel like it to me.
Well, because, I mean, what else is he going to say? What I can't believe is it was Republican Lindsey Graham that asked that question. Like, wow. Wow. You know it's bad.
Yeah.
They're like, yeah. You think you might have a monopoly. Let's just nationalize Facebook and be done with it.
So basically, he said that, you know, there are other apps out there, and he started citing things like WhatsApp and Instagram as being competitors, but they own them.
Yeah, it is. That's great. Our vertical integration and is then actually a competition.
And then
yeah.
The question had to be put in such a way that Lindsey Graham said, if I buy a Ford and it doesn't work well, I don't like it. I buy a Chevy instead. If I'm upset with Facebook, what's the equivalent product I can go sign up for? And then Mark Zuckerberg says, there's a second category I was going to talk about. Then Graham says, I'm not talking about categories. Is there real competition you face? Car companies face a lot of competition. They make a defective car. It gets out in the world. They stop buying that car. And people buy another one. Is there an alternative to Facebook? Then Mark Zuckerberg's answer to this is, yes, Senator. The average American uses 8 apps to communicate with friends and stay in touch with people.
8 apps?
Apparently.
He is like so over his head when it comes to this stuff. Yeah, no. Anybody that thought Zuckerberg was running for president, I hope to let the air out of that balloon. All right.
And, you know, this ultimately
like if
led
you.
Go ahead.
A few weeks ago, I saw an interview with like Bill Gates on the Ellen DeGeneres show, and it was like Bill Gates trying to guess the prices of some everyday items. And I'm kind of getting the same kind of vibe from Mark Zuckerberg here, with the sense that they're both so out of touch with the world in that sense.
Yeah, and see, people in this day and age hate the out of touch. That you see in Mark Zuckerberg, Bill Gates. It doesn't look like them. And it's like these people are making this service that people presumably like to use, but at the same time, they see these people there, and that's not going to make them feel better about Facebook. And this led to a discussion about regulation. Mark Zuckerberg said, my position is not that there should be no regulation. I think the real question as the internet becomes more important in people's lives is what is the right regulation, not whether there should be or not be.
Well, yeah, we wouldn't want to regulate. I'm surprised he didn't say, oh, we're totally capable of regulating ourselves.
Well, that's what it sounds like based on this when you're buying up things like Instagram and WhatsApp and so on and so forth.
Yeah, that's true.
And then there was a talk about potentially a paid version of Facebook. Mark Zuckerberg said there will always be a free version of Facebook, and the CEO explained that an ad-supported model is most aligned with our mission of trying to connect everyone in the world because we want to offer a free service that everyone can afford. And we know what that means. And that led into the discussion about the user agreement. Played out, said by Republican Senator John Kennedy of Louisiana, your user agreement sucks. Here's what everyone's been trying to tell you today, and I'll say it gently. Your user agreement sucks. The purpose of a user agreement is to cover Facebook's rear end and not inform users of their rights. Then Zuckerberg insisted that he, quote, imagines that most people do not read the whole thing, but they have an opportunity to do so.
That's every user agreement ever. It's to protect the companies.
Yeah.
I mean, they're just now coming around to this? Oh, I do declare. I can't believe Facebook would make a user agreement that sucks. Like, are you serious?
Like this whole,
I mean, I'm glad they're on it, but come on.
This whole thing is severely dirtying Facebook. And I think that's a good thing because how long has it been since there has been real competition in the social space?
I don't think there's ever been competition in a social space, right?
Like, I mean, maybe when Facebook was starting up and it was Facebook or MySpace for a bit.
Yeah, but then they just took over. I mean, and there's nothing else.
It's utterly disgusting what was revealed this week. And I mean,
what Facebook is going to have to watch out for is something we touched on last week. If Apple ever comes out and does something on their own end and they make like a life portal that you can get to everything and do everything and it ties in your social stuff, Facebook will be in trouble.
Yeah. And I mean, Google even said, hey, use Google Plus. Because there's no ads on Google Plus.
Because no one does.
There's no ads on Google Plus. Google Plus doesn't harvest your data.
We just harvest everything else.
Yeah. Ay, ay, ay. All right. I mean, I wanted to say as much as this would be a surprise, it wasn't. But hey, this is the reality of a huge tech company that is effectively a monopoly. And if you looked at any of the others out there, like Amazon in particular, maybe Google, yes, you could see monopolies.
Yep. Yep. They all need broken up. They all need broken up.
I'd say that perhaps Microsoft and Apple are the most diverse, as they have competition from OEMs and, you know, system builders like Dell, but they also have unique offerings amongst one another. And see, that's the difference, is Apple and Microsoft are tech companies of the 80s and 90s, whereas these ones we're seeing in the modern monopolies are companies of the 2000s that really have no competition because they're just so big and massive.
Well, I mean, Apple and Microsoft also built products too. Like, they, exactly, have an actual tangible thing.
And there's choice to be made between them.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So our next piece of tech news is that a Korean company, Nexon Netmarble, was penalized for deceiving customers. The country's top game developers, including Nexon and Netmarble, face 1 billion won, $946,000, in penalties imposed by the Fair Trade Commission for deceiving customers with randomized in-game items. So customers pay a fixed price for virtual items, but their concrete characteristics, such as effect and capacity, are determined randomly when a player opens a box. And players who don't have as much disposable income tend to purchase said items, expecting to get valuable items for a small amount of money.
I love it. Are we getting some – we're finally getting some crackdown on the loot boxes.
Yeah, out of Korea of all places, believe it or not.
I know, right? I know.
The odds of receiving a certain piece were as low as 0.5%. Nexon hid such information and said that only 16 pieces – said that 16 pieces were provided at random. The company pointed out, or the FTC rather, pointed out that any ordinary customer would think that the odds of getting each puzzle piece would be similar since they were informed of such rare pieces. But in reality, they were only 0.5%, not 1 in 16. One of the victims ended up spending 460,000 won to complete the said puzzle. Which is, let me just do a currency conversion here for those of us who are living not in Korea. 460,000 won is 540 Canadian dollars or 429 US dollars. Mm. Yeah. So this is a 939 million won penalty on top of the 5.5 million won fee in regards to this. And, you know, they are a big game company in Korea. And this is something that people inside the US, the EU, Canada, and pretty much everywhere that has regulations in terms of these markets need to take account of, because this could be us at some point. And the loot crate industry is one that is effectively unregulated and potentially can be seen as gambling, I think.
Oh, for sure. I mean, yeah, watch out, EA. You better get it together. And I hope – I don't know. I feel like the U.S. is the last place that would ever regulate anything. But I hope we do. I hope this loot box situation does get regulated because – look, if you want to spend money for something, that's fine, but you should get something out of it. And a 0.05% chance. Yeah, something usable. And that's just not it's not enough and it's not right.
Yeah.
But it provides you with a sense of pride and accomplishment.
That sounds like you sound like you're channeling EA there, Derp.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. All right. And our final piece of tech news is something that can perhaps relate to Derp a bit. I don't know. I don't know if you heard about this. But
let's see.
There was a power dispute in between Serbia and Kosovo that resulted in the electrical grid across all of Europe running a little bit slower than it was supposed to. And as a result of this, ovens, microwaves, and alarm clocks along the continent ended up being as much as 6 minutes slow. So basically what they are reporting this week is that these clocks and this electrical power grid, they increased the rate of electrical current on the continental European electrical system to put the clocks back in sync. On average, in the European power system, they expect a frequency of 50 hertz. But between mid-January 2018 and early March, a grid dispute between Kosovo and Serbia resulted in 113 gigawatt hours of unnet power demand from Kosovo. And since Kosovo is part of the Central Europe power system, the unmet demand on the 25-country system led to a system-wide decline in frequency to an average of 49.996 hertz. This meant that clocks were counting down the minutes too slowly, and over 3 months, connected clocks around the continent lost 6 minutes.
You know, now that you mentioned this, I might actually have noticed that, yeah. I just attributed this to, you know, our microwave just being a bit weird since it's not the newest one out there.
Well, there you
this
go.
This really does blow my mind.
So they fixed it by running the power frequency at higher than 50 hertz. And over the span of, I'm not sure how long it took, but they ran it at 50.01 hertz for a month. The missing energy was put back into the system with the collective help of the 25 member countries. And as a result of this, one of the most notable effects is that the digital clocks geared by electric frequency are now back on time.
Let me just check this.
Well, that's good.
It is.
It kind of makes you think, though, or reminds you just how fragile the electrical grids are.
Yeah. Definitely. And I mean, the clocks that determine their time based on the electrical signal coming in are especially vulnerable to that. So this isn't really tech news, but I just got a kick out of this because I'm one of those people that enjoys their clocks being set all the same. And I use an atomic clock on the internet that tells me what the time difference is. So at most, I'm only a few milliseconds off.
There you go.
Yeah.
6 minutes can make a very big difference.
Exactly. All right, so moving on to other things right now, we have our Fletching Skill of the Month. Sorensen 57 is still in first place with 16.3 million XP gained. Parnassius is at second with 5.9, and X-Blades is at third with 209,000. Okay, so before we do the achievements, I want to talk about something, and I want to point everyone to RSBNB Informer at informer.rsbnb.com. So I've penned this piece called Five Steps to Harmony with Jagex. And, you know, Tanis, you and I have talked about what Jagex needs to do in 2018 to get back on the right foot, how 2018 mm-hmm. needs to be a year of victories, and how we're well on our way to accomplishing this with updates like the Aura Bag, Clue Scroll Overhaul, Deep Sea Fishing, and Pieces of Hate.
Mm-hmm.
So I effectively call this the first act, and then I am splitting this redemption arc for Jagex into five acts, just like any play, with a second and third act for the main action, a fourth act for the climax and conclusion, and then a fifth act to just wrap everything up along the way. And the idea behind this is that by the end of this five-act play that Jagex could engage in, we could see a completely different Jagex. We could see a completely different way of developing updates for RuneScape. And this all comes from what we saw last year with the release of Menaphos and the move away from expansions and a way to gear towards something that Jagex hasn't been able to do before, and that is make controversial updates and make them so that the players will accept them. And one of the ones I talk about here is removing raw materials from PVM drops. And I go into how they could accomplish that very successfully. So if this sounds interesting to you, you can give it a read. It's actually pretty long. I intended it to be about half the length as it turned out, but you can find it at informer.rsbnb.com. It's called Five Steps to Harmony with Jagex.
Awesome. I can't wait to go over that.
Yeah. Give it a read.
That looks interesting.
Yeah, for sure.
And if you want just to find a quick link to that, you can find that in the show notes at update.rsbnb.com. All right, so moving on to the achievements here this week. We got Desmo360 with 99 construction on April 10th, KJTH Howard with 200 million magic XP gained on April 8th. That's a big one, big difference from 99. Mm-hmm. And 1234 were cool with 98.9 divination on April 8th. Good job.
And we also have Trips Travis with 99 attack on April 6th and Chaz 5100 with 99 constitution on April 6th.
Nicely done.
Mm-hmm. And then we have It's Cavalero with 99 engineering, such a terrible skill, also on April 6th. And it's truly, or rather just truly a weeb, with 99 thieving, also on April 6th. Congratulations to both.
Good job, everyone.
Yeah, great job.
And to everyone, of course.
All right, time for pick of the week. Derp has a pick of the week that I enjoy, so it must be pretty good. What do you got?
Well, for this pick of the week, I chose the series Designated Survivor. It's a series that I've been watching really recently, and It really took me aback in how it's intriguing the storylines are, and how, well, from an outsider point of view, how well it portrays American politics in a sense. Like it's a series that wants to stay close to reality while still providing intriguing storyline and also with very good acting.
Yeah. And if I must say, while it does provide those parallels to the current situation in the United States, it stays far enough away that it's not outright copying what's going on.
Are we talking about The Apprentice?
Oh, I wish that show was still on TV.
It is. It is. It's called The News.
Anyways, Designated Survivor. Anything else you want to say on this, Derp? Because I could say some stuff as well if you'd like.
You're free to say what you want, but I'll tell everyone who hasn't seen this yet, if you're able to see it. It's really a recommendation to watch it. It's so good. Just watch it, and I'll give Shane the words to praise it some more.
Yeah. You know, it's really a good show, and, you know, and it's not for these reasons, but it might have a contributing factor. It's actually shot in Toronto, believe it or not. They make Toronto look like Washington, D.C. It has Kiefer Sutherland, who is Canadian. And for those of you guys out there who also watch 24 and you might be having 24 withdrawals, you can watch this because there's a good amount of crossover of the actors who you would have seen on 24 at one point. A good number of them have actually appeared on Designated Survivor as well, in different roles nonetheless. So it's that same kind of traditional Kiefer Sutherland, I want to say. And you can kind of feel sometimes a little bit of the channeling from 24, so that makes it good for people who watched 24 in the past. But all in all, it is a pretty good show. So it's in its second season currently.
I'm just confused. How do they get enough people, enough homeless people in Toronto to make it look like Washington?
Yeah, I was so confused too when you told me it was shot in Toronto. I was like, really?
Yep.
They do a good job of it.
Yeah, and I mean, you can tell why that's the case, why there's so much snow. There is actually normally a light amount of snow in Washington, D.C., but on the outside scenes, there's a lot more snow on the show, and that's what you get when you shoot in Toronto. So
yeah, that makes sense. Right.
Yeah.
That makes sense, yeah.
Very nice. Very nice. So that's Designated Survivor. You said you watch it on Netflix over there?
Yes, I do. It's on Netflix.
All right. I'm not sure. Actually, yes, I do. No, it's on ABC in the United States and CTV in Canada. So.
Yeah, of course. That's the Dutch Netflix. Yeah.
All right. Good pick of the week. So what have we been up to this week? Let's start with you, Tanis.
Oh, I've just been slaving trying to clean up Edgeville. With all the extra time I've had, I've just been doing divination and fishing, a little bit of Slayer here and there.
Good.
Yeah, typical week.
All right. How about you, Derp?
What have I been doing
on
apart from learning for my exams? I've basically been doing I've cleaned up Edgeville. At least I've done that, and I think I've done some clues, like always. And I think I got back to the Soul Gazer grinds, my everlasting quest to finally get a Hex Hunter bow or the Soul Gazer's charm.
Do you like the Hex Hunter bow? Because we had a good discussion about it last week.
Yeah, it was buffed like last week indeed, and the buffs are so necessary. And I think,
but don't I don't think they go far enough.
Well, I think now the Hex Hunter bow is actually best in slot for Araxor. I'm not sure on this.
Even better than an Ox?
I think so, yeah.
Oh, because you can Araxor can use a different style, but I didn't know that that would be...
Yeah, magic
I didn't
style.
Know that that would count, yeah.
I think it's best in slot, but don't quote me on this. I'm not a PVM expert, and I will never claim to be.
Huh.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Okay, really there's interesting. Something we missed.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's not surprising. It's not like I don't believe we're big Araxor killers.
Yeah, definitely.
You know what's insane? I did like a duo Araxor kill like a few days ago with a friend of mine. And I got my second middle leg piece on my fifth Araxor kill. That's two middle leg pieces and five kills.
Oh,
wow.
Wow. My Araxor is so insane.
Yeah.
Wow, that's some...
And I know people will be salty over this. So
that's
I thought
some pretty
to mention
good luck. All right. Well, as for me this week on RS, I have done some clue scrolls, cleaned up Edgeville, and been doing divination as well for energy. My clue scrolls, though, you know, it's at a point where you have to kind of wait to sell these items unless you get something like the Hydrix bolt tips, because they're not exactly selling for the value that they're listed, and it's just because there's so many people doing clue scrolls. So I'm kind of holding on for the time being to see what we can get out of that. So, but as I said, I have made 20 million GP in the last 2 weeks or so doing divination. So that's pretty good.
That's pretty decent.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you have a high enough invention level for it, but I think Motimbo is working on some more alchemical onyx jewelry for Game Jam.
Yep, that's happening.
So it might be in your best interest to actually disassemble Fortunate components and not sell them.
Hmm.
So you can have a stack of them to make some alchemical onyxes and make bank once those...
See, the problem with that, though, the problem with that, though, is I don't have a, I don't have 107 invention for that.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
That would be the issue. Yeah.
Yeah. Anyways, I believe that's it for this episode of RSBNB Update. Thank you, Derp, for being here.
Yep. Thank you for having me.
Yep. Anything else before we go from either of you?
No.
All right.
I think there's one thing I have to say, otherwise someone will be very mad at me, and that's to say unhoods.
Ah, yes, of course, unhoods. That makes sense. One of the internal little clan quest jokes or memes that everyone gets great fun about. So,
am I the first one to say it on the podcast?
I believe you are.
Yeah, I've never heard it before.
Really?
Yeah.
I thought it was like Dutch or something. Like, what'd he call me? Like, I didn't know what that was.
What? Oh, also, it's just really insane how much I've been gesturing at the screen at the screen, and I'm just realizing that you're not actually seeing me doing this.
Yeah, we don't. We're not a video show. We could at some point, but we'll save that discussion for a later date. So with that being said, this has been RSBNB Update. Thank you for joining us, everyone. If you want to find full show notes, you can find that at update.rsbnb.com. And if you want to join us in-game in the middle of the week in between episodes, in between the bite, youtube.com/rsbnb. Join us in-game at Friends Chat Bits Bytes, and we'll see you next week for another episode of RSBNB Update.
Take care.
Bye-bye.